Bag huge savings on your painting projects at Menards. From your kitchen and bath to doors and trim, and even your ceilings, Dutch Boy has the perfect choice for your painting projects. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is a tough paint and primer that provides great scrub resistance and durability. DuraFighter interior paint starts at $27.75 a gallon. Get an additional 15% savings on all Dutch Boy paints when you put it in the bag. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
I'm your daddy.
I can be smart when it's important.
I'm your daddy. I'm your daddy.
I'm a star!
Welcome to Daddy Dailies, the podcast hosted by Not Your Daddy's Films. On a film set, dailies are sent out after a shoot day so you can see the work in progress. Daddy Dailies are conversations that go behind the scenes so you can see what work went into the process and be better armed to succeed in the industry.
Daddy Dailies, hosted by Not Your Daddy's Films.
Hello, hello, Not Your Daddy's Films community. This is Carly, one of your co-founders. You are about to listen to our script to screen panel that we recorded all the way back in February 2024. So we're over a year old here. Do with that what you will. Things are different. Jobs have changed. But you know what? We're going to roll out this full episode for you because it's the most amazing information. And you guys get it. Without further ado, please enjoy our script to screen panel.
Okay, you guys are so beautiful. This is a really easy audience to look at. I'm Vika. I'm one of the founders as well. I'm a multi-hyphenate like a lot of you guys. I think that everybody in here has a lot to learn from these folks. So I will introduce you to our fantastic guest. Next to me, we have Aubrey Bendix. She's a producer. Yes. She's a VP of film at Ace Entertainment. And she's done To All the Boys I've Loved Before, Before I Fall, XO Kitty, Love at First Sight, and I Wish You All the Best, co-written and directed by Tommy Dorsey. Then we have Jennifer Scher. She is a writer and a showrunner. She's written on Big Love, Army Wives, created The Catch, and executive produced In Treatment and My Brilliant Friend. Then we have Tamara Lee Nutcutt, casting director. They two have worked together before on To All the Boys I've Loved Before. She did The Buccaneers, the film Devotion, which was incredible. Then we have Davina Heflin, an agent at Verve. Davina is from the East Coast, like me. Received her MFA in screenwriting from Chapman and then realized her true passion was representation. Since then, she dedicated herself to identifying diverse voices, building them up, and helping them tell stories that will have a positive and lasting impact on the industry. Heflin is at Verve, previously was at Gersh, where you were an assistant, right? So you've moved up the ranks, which is really incredible. Give them a round of applause. So today is really about talking, from page one of your script, which I know Davina and all of these folks have experience with, like seeing that story just on the written page and then having it come to life on your actual TV or film screens. So, Davina, if you don't mind, we could start with you. You work with writers and showrunners and directors. So how do you build a roster and what do you think makes someone stand out? Is it voice? Is it tone? Like, what are you looking for when you want to work with someone?
Yeah, definitely. Hey, everybody. Nice to meet everybody. Thanks for having us. For me, I think ability on the page for writers. Writing is a craft. It is something that you work at, that you practice. Every time you do it, you get better and better and better and better. And I think that for me, somebody who stands out is somebody who can tell me their dream on a story, build a whole world on a story, build people that I think are real and allow me to escape a little bit into that world and into those people. That is a successful writer right there. And that's somebody that can pour into. And then I think on the person side, a human being, somebody who is very aware that this is a people business and that we are here to create art that can possibly change the world. That's a big thing, right? You want somebody that is aware of that weight and can still tell those stories and can push and push and push to get better and better and better at it. That's somebody that makes me sit back and say, wow, okay, definitely I want to pour into this.
That's beautiful. It's like, I know we all get into this as artists because we have stories to tell. So it's really nice to hear you say that. So Aubrey, as we mentioned, you have worked on household hits like To All the Boys I've Loved Before. And I'm curious, as a producer, what does your day-to-day look like in prep and then on set, if you're going to set, then what is the most rewarding part to you?
That's a big question.
Yes,
there's a. I could sit here for 4 hours and talk about that. So my day to day, and this is why I love being a producer, I think, is I really love seeing a project from the very, very seed of something all the way through to the end. And it's also specifically why I really like working in film. I also work on Exo Kitty, which has been such an amazing process to put a series together too. It was my first time doing that. But I really like the beginning, middle, and end that filmmaking is specifically. And so I love every part of putting a movie together. I love working with the writers and honing in on what that script looks like. And, you know, when you get to that through that prep process and you start to look for locations and work with a production designer and have your actors in front of you, and Tamara knows this too, like your script will change. And so then it's really amazing to continue to work with a writer as you start to hone in on this movie that might look very different from what it initially was in front of you, just in words. And so I really like that sweet spot where you're under pressure and you have a deadline to make and you're right about to shoot something and you have every person who's involved in putting that movie together at a table saying, how do we do this? What do we need to change? What do we need to do in this next 5 days to all of a sudden be in front of a camera and see it all come together? So I think one of the most rewarding parts is making it to that day one of shooting. Cause then if you've done your job right, then it should be smooth, like pretty smooth sailing once you're there. But the lead up to that is actually for me the most exciting part of getting to put it all together. And then of course you then see a whole other iteration of what that project looks like in the edit room. Like sometimes you think you see the dailies, you see what's on a monitor, and I'm sure you feel the same way about this too. You think you shot one thing and then you get into the edit bay and you're like, this is an entirely different movie than what I thought we were making, but okay, let's just do it and make it what it is that we have to do. So it's different with every project, I think, but there's pieces of each part of that element that I really enjoy doing. I think I answered the question.
Yes, no, and I also I hit you with a two-parter.
Yeah.
So tomorrow, you guys have worked together, so this feels like it goes in tandem with what Aubrey was just talking about, which is what kind of questions do you find yourself asking when you're brought onto a project of the director or the producer or the showrunner, depending on like who you're working with? And then I'm wondering, because you did Buccaneers, mm-hmm. and that's a period piece, do you have a different approach when it's not like set in present day?
I'll ask the Buccaneers one first. I've already blanked. I'm like, I don't know what you said. Hi, everyone. With the Buccaneers specifically, we wanted to make something that felt very contemporary, even though it was a period piece. And so I, you know, didn't have the restrictions that are usually laid on you, especially when it comes to race. I'm very much somebody that always strives for representation on screen, be it female, be it people of color, be it people of different genders who identify as different genders. And so that was a great opportunity because they were actually very open to my suggestions. We ended up casting Josie Tota, who's trans, but not necessarily acknowledging the fact that she is trans. And it's just actually just being a great actor and embodying the role, which is so nice because, you know, oftentimes it's so difficult when you identify a certain way, and you know, that's also having to be portrayed on the screen. Sometimes it's nice to just play a character and not actually have to, you know, and acknowledge anything else, you know, which was great. And then with all of the actors, it was just really great to be open to casting people of color, and that was very freeing. And I can't remember what you said for the first part of it.
So I was wondering, like, and that is perfect with what you just said. When you were making these suggestions, like, what kind of questions are you asking the creative team?
Yeah, just stuff like that. It's you obviously want to kind of realize somebody's vision, and you can't really impose your own vision onto it. Hopefully you align.
Yeah.
Sometimes you don't, and that's always tricky. but you figure it out. But, you know, oftentimes I ask people when I start a project, like in your dream scenario, especially if it's a writer director, like who did you see in the part when you read it? Even if it's just like pipe dream person, because that really helps me go, okay, that I kind of understand the tone. I kind of understand where they're going. And then I can present actors that maybe embody some kind of element that person has. But, you know, as well as offering them other ideas to that as well. But yeah, generally I just ask, who do you see in the role? And then I can go.
Yeah, that's awesome. Jen, you've worked in a wide variety of genres and you've adapted IP. And I'm curious, for those of you that don't know, My Brilliant Friend is based on book, And how did approaching that differ from doing, say, The Catch, which I know you worked with a writer on as well?
That was not really an adaptation. That was just sort of hearing this idea that people were interested in, Shondaland was interested in doing, and so taking it from there. But My Brilliant Friend has been different in every way. The first adaptation that I was ever part of was, but it was nonfiction, was Unbelievable. And it was, that's the first time ever taking a book and like being in a room and like then adapting it for the screen. So that was a huge lesson. There was a big education in that for me. And then, so going into My Brilliant Friend next, it was just very different because all of the writers, I mean, it's written in Italian, all of the writers, the room and the producer, everyone there is in Naples, Italy. So in no way was it a typical sort of television experience.
Do you speak Italian?
I do a lot more now than when I started. but no, we would just start. I mean, that is a series of four giant books. And so we knew that we would be doing all, like each book was going to be a season. And we knew that from the beginning. So it was sitting down and sort of mapping out what are the pieces of each of these books that are going to be the highlight, the like sort of benchmark or post tent poles for each season. And then so it was just like this massive map that we were putting together over, you know, it was probably 4,000 pages of material to try to adapt. So that was, again, very interesting, very difficult. But I think at the end of the day, what I am just most proud of about the show is that I think it really feels very faithful to the books. And that's not always the case with an adaptation, right? You take a book and you need to actually make it something else to be on television. And for some reason, this just, you know, it worked out in a way that feels like it's honoring the source material.
And when you are selecting writers for that process, is there something different that you're looking for, or is it similar to the previous?
Again, that's different story, because there's not a huge writing community in Italy. Like there's like a few people who write for television there. So it was really like HBO said, who's the best writers in Italy? You can go and get them. So yeah.
It's amazing. Well, this is for any of you. I know that we're all at varying stages as we've discussed. So are there mistakes that you've seen in the development process that can kill a project or change it in another direction that you would advise against, or maybe a mistake that actually led to something amazing? Or mistake I'm using loosely.
No, I think that as a producer, and this will be music to a lot of people's ears, I think that you need to trust in your writers. You really need to trust that they are writers because they are. They are really good and have honed this craft that, to Vina's point, like this is something that these people have worked on for a very long time. And so when you're working on a creative team, I always think, you know, best idea wins for sure. But I think that your writers are coming in with a very specific skill and they are good at it for a reason. And so I think that listening to your writers in a process when you don't exactly know which way to go, for me that's always worked for me. Like if I have a problem that I need to solve, being able to go back to our writers and pay them for it, is always the thing that is going to, I think, make your project better, because that's what they do. And so I think that that's something a lot of other people could maybe learn, but
I guess it's kind of a continuation of that. Kind of in reverse. Any project I've seen go throughout the pipeline that resists the culture of collaboration fails.
Bag huge savings on your painting projects at Menards. From your kitchen and bath to doors and trim, and even your ceilings, Dutch Boy has the perfect choice for your painting projects. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is a tough paint and primer that provides great scrub resistance and durability. DuraFighter interior paint starts at $27.75 a gallon. Get an additional 15% savings on all Dutch Boy paints when you put it in the bag. See store for complete details.
Save big money at
in some way, shape, or form. Even if it gets made, there's still a window of failure in it. One of the first lessons, I didn't come from a passion of the film industry whenever I entered, so I knew nothing whatsoever. One of the things that got drilled into our minds is that this is an industry of collaborations. Everybody serves a purpose in the engine. We are all tools. And the ideal thing is if we all do it at the best of our abilities with a pure heart, it can get done. And there is a sense of magical in that, because I'm sure whenever you're done on set and you're all exhausted and you're like, how the hell did we even do this? You feel that magic because you're like, you know what? We got the fucking shot. We did it. So I think that, trusting everybody, trusting that everybody is going to come to the table to the best of their ability and not resisting that process, trusting that process, I think that that's when a project fails and that's when it kind of loses its potential.
So Janina, to follow up on that, we have a lot of writer directors here today. Is there a way that you help facilitate getting their work in front of someone like Aubrey, or how do you pair people or pitch a client, I guess? Pick that whichever way you want.
Yeah, I think there's a practicalness about it. I do the same thing that y'all do every single day doing here. I go out, I meet people, I try to be their friends. I try to be a friendly person and hope that it could turn into something. And I think that that's what it's about. I think that for me, I have to approach it as this is relationship building, right? Because like the projects that you guys make are really near and dear to your heart. And I don't want to ruin that in any way, shape, or form. So I think that having relationships and being able to see into people and understanding that connection, that's what allows me to make that statement of like, you know who you'd vibe with? This person over here. If I approach it as, oh, this is the one thing that you have made, therefore this is all that I can go off of to send you around to people, then that starts to form a box, right? But if I take it to, no, I know you as a creative and I know the people that are in the trenches making it happen time and time again, then I can help facilitate that and make that happen. And I meet them just like you guys. I come to events, I pick up the phone, I try to get connected with them. I've done the cold calls, I've done it all.
Connectors are magical people. So that's really, really cool to hear. You spoke a little bit to this, but Issa Rae just gave this really awesome interview in Time Magazine. If you haven't read it, I recommend reading it. But she was talking about the shape of the industry and what she calls Hollywood backsliding on pledges to increase representation and diversity. She says, I've never seen Hollywood this scared and clueless at the mercy of Wall Street. This is something that I think affects all of us, so many different backgrounds and identities in this room. So how can directors, but anyone in the creative process, help ensure representation in front of and behind the camera?
Make stuff.
Yeah.
Honestly, like, you know, my company is known, obviously, we're known for making romantic comedies. We make other things too, but I think that's kind of our bread and butter, the youth-oriented, as we now say, YA project. There's so many terms. Netflix keeps throwing things at me. I'm like, just make up your mind. I'll call it whatever you want. New adult. But
new adult.
It's new adult. No, but I think that, you know, we're known for making something, but also sometimes things come across our plates that are different than what we're known for making. And I'm going to use Tommy Dorkman's movie as an example. It was a script that was very specific. It's a movie about a non-binary teenager that gets kicked out of their southern parents' home and moves in with their sister and brother-in-law. And it's kind of a snapshot of a life of a young person figuring out who they are. Not a movie necessarily that Ace would have normally invested in, I think, but Tommy wrote a really wonderful script. She had not gotten a script made before. She had not directed before. But this one is something that one of my junior execs brought in and we've just felt really passionately about. And I felt lucky enough to work with someone who was like, do you guys feel this strongly about telling this story? Go make it for this amount of money. There was a certain price tag. So it was a smaller movie than we usually make. But I think Tommy had been writing a lot of stuff for a really long time that people were reading and liking, I think, but not getting made. And so I think that her continuing to work on that, and I'm sure everyone sitting here has probably worked with people like that. You just have to keep doing it and writing about what you think is important. And I think that this
when it falls into the right hands and you keep doing it, eventually I think you will have a chance, I believe, to make something that is meaningful and outside of the algorithm, which is getting thrown in all of our faces lately, which I know goes back to your original question.
Yeah, yeah.
I think a lot of us probably right now feel like we're making things for an algorithm, which is really hard. And so there's like this balance now for us anyway, to listen to our buyers and also listen, trust ourselves and say, but what do we like and what is good? And how do you tick both of those boxes?
Yeah. I love that.
You speaking of that makes me think there are these resources to all of us. Like there's this group called Good Energy Story, and I'm blanking on the name, but I used to work on the studio side, and this group came in to advocate on how we could represent folks with different abilities. And so there are all of these things for free on the internet, even for us making and funding our own films. So just something to keep in mind. Good Energy Stories about climate, how you can involve the environment and climate in all of your work. And it doesn't have to be like on the nose, but how you can really like advocate for the things that matter to you through the story you're telling. So with that in mind, when we've got someone making and funding their own feature or their own short, a lot of times I hear friends being like, I'm just going to cast my friends or actors I know who will do this, get favors. Is there a way to work with someone like you on like an independent project?
Yeah, you know, oftentimes I work on independent films or shorts, and, you know, it's a labor of love. So I don't do them now unless I really either love the filmmaker or really love the script or both, because it's a real hard journey. And especially for full features, it's really tough because we're often kind of working as producers in a way, because if they're sort of new filmmakers, that we're having to put our relationships on the line as casting directors and call up the agents and try and get the script in front of them and go, sorry, there's no money. And like, hope that they'll like take it seriously enough to then attach and then take it somewhere so someone will actually invest in it. But, you know, I'm open to it. But again, it's just, you know, it's just got to be a really great piece of writing and a great vision and, you know, someone that I feel like I can collaborate with and who's open to that. Because, you know, some people are just very much like, especially some writer directors, because they've written something, have such a clear vision, but it might not be how I see it as well. And so it's just sort of like, you want to be able to know that you can work with someone and sort of come to the table in a collaborative way instead of just sort of a singular way.
Yeah, I love that. Makes me think of everything through a new lens. So Jen, you've climbed the ranks as a writer, and I think there are probably people who don't fully understand what being a showrunner means. How would you describe it? And did you feel ready when that opportunity came to you?
You know, the role of a showrunner really is being... sadly, it's like being the CEO of a pretty big company. And that is not, as a writer, what you're ever trained to do when you're coming up the ranks, ever. So it's a very odd thing that they just say, okay, now you have $60 million to go make this thing. And you're like, but I just sit in a room and type words. And then you're like managing hundreds of people. And there's a very steep learning curve when you first start to do it. And then it's something that really works for some people and some temperaments. And there, I have worked for a lot of people that it probably wasn't the right job for them.
Yep.
And they're still doing it. It's fine. It is a really... challenging job, but it is like being a writer director on your own material. You are the steward of this material. You're just on the, you know, when you're making a television show, you are beholden to so many different aspects. You know, you have the studio and you have the network and you have all of the executives, you have the producers that are on it, you have the actors that have agreed to come on and really like risk their, and actor producers. Yes, a lot of people can get titles. It's fun. But actually sometimes that can be fabulous too, because it invests them in a different way too. But anyway, so that's the job of a showrunner. You really just put your life aside, especially when production starts, and you're just, that is what you are doing almost 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But, you know, you shoot for 4 months and then you rest or you try. And I will say that I did feel ready.
I love that.
Because I had done every single level, starting at staff writer and worked my way up every single one to some multiple times. And so that I felt really lucky that I didn't have, and this is probably not a, you know, I know you're all young
you know, filmmakers and you want to get out there and make your thing right away. But for me, I felt like, thank God that didn't happen for me too early, because I think I would have made even more mistakes than I made the first time around. Like, because you learn so much about what you think works, what you see that doesn't work, that you're never going to do. And you start to build your own, because no one can teach you how to do the job. You can't go to school to learn that. So you have to sort of like get an education in what's going to be your style of doing that kind of work. And so I did feel I was very thankful that it hadn't happened until it did.
Yeah. And did you have the opportunity to be on set as a writer prior to being in that position? Because some shows will send their writers to set. Some only send a few. It really, really varies.
When I came into the business, it was standard. The writer was always on set for their episode. And then that just got frittered away over the years. And we just, you know, I think we just made some gains with the strike in getting people back on set so that writers can learn how to do the job of running a show. I mean, the thought of not putting people on set and letting them see how this huge machine operates is wild to me. Like, why that wouldn't be just, that's your training ground.
Yeah.
For your eventual showrunners of your shows. So anyways.
Yeah. And I think getting to do indie film is one way, but when you're on a huge set with a big budget, that is a very different experience. I'm lucky that in my experience, I got to go to set to produce my episode, but it changes everything. I think it makes you a better writer and a better collaborator, because you, like, there's, you know, the people whose job it is to be like, okay, there's a cup of coffee. What kind of cup, you know, is it, does it have an arm on the mug, you know? And people really take it all seriously. And I think it has deepened my respect for everybody's job on set. So I've worked, in my experience, I don't know if this is all of your experience, mostly with men. And this is a heavily male-dominated space. Do you have any stories, like, for sharing how you've moved through this industry? How has that, like, shaped your experience?
Yeah. We've all got terrible stories great ones, but terrible ones.
We'll see. And I wonder how you all feel about this. You know, Me Too and the Me Too movement was something that, when it came, meant so much more than just what it was. And I think we all probably started working in the industry before that was a thing. And it was different. It was different. I was an assistant, a very young assistant during that time. And I have stories for sure where you kind of see, you grin and bear stuff that now, if I admitted it, I would be horrified that I allowed some of those things to happen. But it's an industry, and I think it's changing, thank God, but it's an industry where you say, well, I have to suck it up and bear it, because if I don't, then I'm not going to be able to move forward, and I'm going to have some sort of label put on me. And so I really just got to smile and say, let me get through this so that I can get to the next phase. And I did that a lot. And I bet a lot of us did that a lot. And I think that what I can say that I learned from that experience is that, one, you shouldn't have to do that. Like, stick with your convictions. When you know something is wrong, like, get out. And you know what? I did that too. I had an experience at a company where I was working for a very big producer. and it was toxic environment. And I could have gone on and continued to push myself in that job and say, I got to suck it up because this is a big opportunity. And instead, I left. And I spoke my mind for the first time to that person, which is thank you. But that's a hard thing to do, I think, when you're used to staying quiet. And so I think that now that I'm in a position where I get to run a set and run a production, I try to be so cognizant of listening to people, not just women on my set, but everybody, listening and noticing and saying, is something awry, or do you need something, or how, because at the end of the day, like Davina said, it is such a collaboration. Getting a project made is so hard. That's why even when I see a movie that I'm like, this wasn't that great, good for them. They made a movie.
Yeah.
Like, that's so hard. Do you know what I mean? Like, the fact that you made something, I'm like, good for you. Like, and so I think that if not all the pieces are working together and everyone doesn't feel comfortable, like, you're not going to have a good product. And I think a lot of people forget that. If you don't have happy people, and I bet Tamara has seen a lot of this, because a lot of times casting directors will hear back from their actors because they have a really close relationship with them when something isn't going right. I think that
you know, if everyone isn't working together in that way to make the best possible environment, then you're not going to have a good product. I don't know what the question was.
I loved that. No, I just needed that to settle for a second.
I mean, when I started out, I was one of just me or maybe one other woman in every writer's room I was ever in. And there were certainly very rarely people of color. And certainly like anybody who identified differently, it was not interesting to the people who were, you know, very used to being in charge. So it was certainly like, I think at the time it was like, well, look, there's this blonde who like can come sit in the room. And like, yeah, I know. You have to just know that I certainly had to learn very quickly that is how they see you in that role. And that, I guess the glory of that is then you get to pleasantly surprise them and then you can like keep working. But it was really hard. It is very different now. I do think, you know, you go into a room now and you are seeing at least, you know, a much wider spectrum of points of view. And that is a gift to art, and it's a gift to what we are all trying to do and tell stories that actually reflect humanity. This is like the whole AI thing. It's like, how are we going? Sorry, did I jump?
No. I just gasped in agreement.
But like the point of the work that we do and the reason it has touched people for so long is that it actually comes from a soulful place. And the idea that a computer can write that and reflect back to us ourselves is bananas. Like that is, and it doesn't mean it's not going to happen. It just means that I'm not sure what that means for all of us. So that's positive. Go get them, Tigers.
Well, I think that like she put a positive spin on that because it's not, it's terrifying. And I don't know enough about tech and science to know what's capable. But I think to me, the idea is that that stuff gets regurgitated and there's no new. And what we do as human beings is incorporate our new experiences and our new, like, you know, I've met like at least 8 new people today and that influences me in a different way. And I think that that's like the silver lining.
Yeah. I mean, you know, just going back to, you know, experiences and in a very male, still very male dominated industry and coming from it from casting, you know, back in the day, it was, you know, I put up with a lot of terrible situations and, you know, sexual harassment, bullying, like the whole thing from producers, from directors. And there's still, you know, I try and, you know, strive to work with female filmmakers, but there's still, you know, I can only take the jobs that I'm offered, you know, so I can, you know, I still try and choose now good people to work with. You never know until you're in it. And I would just say that everybody talks now. And before there was rumors, but no one really cared. They just carried on in hiring terrible people. But nowadays I know that, for example, people will call me and be like, oh, so you worked with so-and-so. What are they like? Are they a good person? Do I want to be around them for like 6 months of this year? And so it's always just like a note to say, always be well-behaved, you know, because if you're not nice and kind to people, people will find out. And that can really go against you. I've had people not hire actors because they're assholes and or have behaved in a really bad way on a set previously. And they might have been going for a bad time. You know, it's sometimes it's hard to be like judged from one specific job if you don't know all of the details. But equally, there's something to say about just being cognizant of people around you. And if you're having a bad day, just go and scream in your trailer. Do you know what I mean? Don't take it out on somebody else. But sadly, you know, even with Me Too and everything that's been going on, it's still happening. And you will encounter it, sadly, in your career at some point. And it's just about, as Aubrey said, you know, standing up and deciding what your morals are and what you want to handle and speaking up and advocating for yourself. I didn't name anybody.
We can keep it in.
I'm going to chat in this positive. I got this. To your point, those phone calls do happen. Before we sign, we call everybody you have worked with to see if you are a good human. So that's a very real thing. Not to make it very serious, but that is a real thing. So like, yeah, be a good person whenever you go in to do your job. And yeah, it gets really frustrating and yeah, it gets really hard, but like, be a good person. That's it. I think that, yes, there's a special generation of us who know pre-Me Too and post Me Too with the idea of where we're supposed to be. And I think that that is a safety to hold on to. because I don't play that shit, right? So just know, and I'm pretty sure all of us would say that. There's a generation of us who don't play that, and we do stand there as strong arms, and we are there as a safety net to make sure that things go according to plan and that you are safe as you go into these experiences. I've gotten that phone call from clients saying, yeah, this general wasn't it. This one wasn't it. That's it. And I've had to have these conversations with people to say, hey, yeah, no, not over here, wrong one, right? So I think that that is a good thing. And I think that that is why we are seeing things progress even more. And there will be a day when this generation retires. We'll say retires. Retires. And we can fill these roles and make sure that the engine is going as it should be so that we can do the work that we've worked so hard to get here to do.
So I think I'm hearing, don't be an asshole. I'm hearing, as cliche as it might sound, be the change you want to see in the world. And, you know, we're here to tell stories and also like protect your heart and your energy and make sure you have your mental health taken care of so you're not taking it out on other people. And I think this is a room full of people who are looking for that real, genuine connection. And that's why we're all here and wanting to collaborate together. So you've probably all worked with first-time creators. What do you think gets someone to feel comfortable saying yes to a newbie director or writer or actor?
I work with a lot of first-time filmmakers, a lot of first-time directors specifically. And I think, again, I'm going back to Davina's collaboration, but that's what it is. Like, I think if I meet a young person who has wowed me in some way and we want to stick our neck out and spend $8 million on their project for them or more, I'm looking for someone who's willing to work with us too and say, I'm really passionate about this thing, but I'm going to listen to you guys because you've done this before and you've done it a lot. And because sometimes you'll meet creatives who, to their credit, are really, they dig their heels in because it's their thing. And I totally respect those people because that's their baby and you've worked on it really, really hard. But sometimes that's not the project for us to take on because you have to be willing a little bit to let go of that and let someone else come in and say, we're going to have to change this. We're going to have to, for X, Y, Z reasons. And so I think I'm really looking for someone in a first-time director who is okay letting go of those reins a little bit and saying, I trust you, let's work together on making this thing happen. And I know that's really hard for people who have something so close to them that they're letting out into the world for the first time. I think that's what I look for the most. Yeah.
But that's a good, I mean, if you are in a position to work with somebody who is going to come to you and say, this is going to have to be a little bit different. This is our budget. We can't do this chase scene that you are obsessed with. We're obsessed with it too, but we can't do it. You know, so we're going to have to figure out another way, you know, but use that instead of feeling like it is taking something away from you. You try to think of that as, oh, I am learning how to write something for budget, which is going to be expected of you for the rest of your career. And so here's your first chance to get to do it and see what it feels like and like work through that. And there's every single step of the way, especially if it's your first time doing something and you are collaborating with people who have done this over and over again, think of it as a chance to learn about how this business works. And hopefully you're working with someone who does also want to protect your vision and your idea and your all of that. You know, that's the hope that those two things could work together. And that's, you know, but if you are in a safe space, you can ask every question in the world about why you have to do that. Why do I have to cut the car chase scene? Can't we cut the scene where, well, no, that, you know, but you ask all the questions. You don't have to do it just because someone tells you to do it. But you also think of it as an education in how writing works in this business and directing. And exactly. Yes. But then save that car chase for your next thing where you're going to get more money to make your next thing.
When it comes to actors and working with a first-time filmmaker, I think it's just, again, especially if they're a writer-director, you know, they might have, I don't know, Emma Stone in their head and it's sort of like, okay, and that's the person. But it's about just being open to different options. You know, different people can actually bring something to a role that you never thought about. When you see an audition, someone can say your words in a completely different way that you ever saw it and actually could be better than how you saw it. And so it's just about being open to that experience and just willing to learn. And also, I would say, making sure that you sort of
take the respect to look at those people's work as well. Like, look at what those actors have done, read their or watch their materials if you can. I mean, I work with very big directors who do none of that shit at all. but as you know, as this the younger generation coming up, you know, I've worked with great filmmakers who, you know, I'll say so-and-so and they'll be like, I don't know who that is. And then the next day they've watched all of their stuff. They've really educated themselves on that person. And that's something I really like respect in, you know, new filmmakers especially, but filmmakers in general. It's like, know who you are talking to and know who you, know who's out there. Like, you know, as a director, you like look up to Scorsese and all of those people, know who the actors are as well and like do your research.
For me, be prepared. Know your shit. Really? It's a really scary thing when I've worked so hard to build a relationship with an executive or a producer or anyone, and I send you in and you have no idea how to work a meeting, right? How to do the thing. You know, the couch tour. It's a big thing, right? So be prepared. Do your homework, right? Know who you're sitting before. And I say this because I can, because I had the biggest learning curve out of every single room I have gone into. I did not know. I left my very first mixer because I didn't know anything. And the anxiety got so bad and people were name dropping. I didn't know what to do. So I left. I'm so serious. Know what's going on. Know what you're there to talk about. Know how to articulate. For those of us who do pitches, right? What's the key to a pitch? Practice. You got to do it over and over and over and over again until you can get it right. It's the same exact thing, right? Know what you want to talk about. Know who you're sitting before. And then at the tail end of that is you need to be an expert. The reality is that we are in a contracting marketplace. What does that mean? The money is going away. It's going to come back because that's supposedly how the engine is supposed to work. It goes through its ups and downs and it's going to come back. But what does that mean? Less, right? So what does that mean for you? Be the best. Put in the work. Sit on that page. Get in front of that camera, right? We got cameras now sitting on iPhones, right? Get in front of that camera. Right. If you got to write your own script, get it done. What did you say earlier? Make your shit. Get it done. The more you do, the better the content is, the better we are getting, the more money is going to come back to make your projects. Right. Make one project here. Take that money. Go make the project where you want it, where you get the big boom at the end.
Yeah. Okay. You are ready. I was like, audience questions. Go ahead. I'll repeat it so you guys can all hear. So the question was, what type of work inspires our panelists? Yeah.
Oh, well, sure. I'll be the first one. He had a thing going. We got a line. Okay.
This is going to sound cliche and dumb, but like, I love
when I read, I'm a lover of all genre. I think all of us probably in this room are going to say that, just because if you're not, then it's, you know, there's so much good content out there right now to watch in all different. What I love about where the industry is taking us with streaming is that if you are interested in something, you will find it. It is out there. Someone has made something about it. I love that. I think that if I had to pick something, I feel really passionate, truly, about the romantic comedy. And that's going to sound funny, but I have found myself at a company who makes those movies. And I feel so grateful because they grew me. You know what I mean? Like, I learned so many lessons about life and love and honestly being a woman from growing up watching these movies and watching them evolve. Like some you go back and watch and you're like, that isn't it. Like, don't recommend that to a 17-year-old because there's a lot of problems with it. But I will say I'm like a sap at heart. And so I think that I really do feel lucky to be able to make movies that are the movies that I fell in love with growing up. But that being said, I'm in post on a tech thriller and a family drama and a heist movie. So you know what I mean? Like, and I love all of them for different reasons. So that's a really hard question.
I mean, I would imagine that, you know, the joy of working in the business for long enough is that eventually you do sort of get to hone in on the thing that you love. And so for me, I get to now work on things that are super small that no one wants to make anymore, which is awesome. I love those. But like on a show like In Treatment, which is two people sitting in a room together for 30 minutes and just talking back and forth. Like to me, like if you're in the mind and you're in the heart and you're in the soul, like that is really delicious to me. But again, those shows are fewer and far between as the contraction continues. They just need something big and splashy. And there's a place for that, too. But that's where my sort of sensibilities lie. That's what gets me excited about. You know, I'm same with my brilliant friend, like female friendship. Yay. Like, that's it.
Projects that inspire me. I just want to work on stuff that I would watch. And I think that, again, and sometimes it's hard, especially at the beginning of your career, because sometimes you have to take the job because you need the money or, you know, just because you need the relationships or you just need to work. But as you get sort of, you know, a bit more established, yeah, that's my thing that excites me. So, you know, I like all kinds of different genres of stuff, but it's like, if I read a script and go, oh, I'd love to watch this, especially when it comes to TV, because if you don't like that show and you're on it for like 10 episodes or 12 episodes or whatever it is, it's like, you better like it. Otherwise, you're really suffering for like 6 months of, you know, just going, oh God, not this episode. And also projects where I get to cast people that maybe haven't had any opportunities yet. That's what really excites me, because giving someone a platform to take a role that they may not have ever been seen for before. And in this industry now, it's sort of a lot of it casting names because it helps get the financing and helps put bums on seats or whatever. But having the opportunity to cast people in roles that sort of change their careers, like with Noah and Lana, it's so wonderful to see them now and see how they've grown in their career. So
for me, so mine isn't a specific genre. I think that I'm just a craft of technique. Because I come from a writing background, I'm really in tune with the process that it takes to make words beautiful on a page. So that's what really turns me up whenever I get script and I'm like, oh, that's new, that's different. I like seeing that kind of stuff. I think my personal taste, I could do genre. I love genre. I love genre blends. I love character studies. I think Lars and the Real Girl is such a beautiful movie. Oh, inside the mind of somebody. I love stuff like that. But at the same time, most of my roster is comedy, right? So I think like that's night and day right there. I think that for someone in my position, it's not about a specific type of genre. I think it's a specific type of person. And that's kind of what my scope and frame of mind is.
Right over there. So the question is how to create an environment of kindness while doing that delicate dance between being the boss and then not being perceived as bitchy or any title that people want to throw at us for being in charge.
My experience has been that if you lead with honesty, even if it is a hard truth, you don't get perceived that way. If you just have to say like, I'm not sure that this, you're doing the job that I'm asking you to do. Can we talk about how to make, you know, like saying it and not trying to dance around it or try to like play games around it or try to marginalize somebody, you know, you just say the thing. And that's really hard because we are not necessarily as women trained to do that. So it is, you know, that has been a learning lesson for me too. But I have found that the people that I've worked with in the business, the women who are the most powerful, who are the most respected, are the women who actually just say the hard thing when it needs to be said. And you don't resent them for that.
I would say call it out. Me being a woman and me being Black, you got to navigate a lot of things very interestingly. But if you're speaking in truth and you're calling something out, then you're able to check it in a way that hopefully, possibly, we're praying some change can happen, right? That's how you make it better for your experience and better for the next person after you. Because we always got to think about that too. Reach one, teach one. I've had countless conversations where I got to say, now listen, I'm not being the angry Black woman here. I'm justified in what I am saying, and this is why, and here goes my facts, right? And the room gets quiet. Which is exactly what I want. I want to be heard. I want to be heard. And that's why I'm speaking, right? So I think that you have to have a sense of boldness and you have to be able to work through that fear of the what if of what could possibly happen in the bad way. And we got to face that and we got to push through that. And we got to be able to look whatever is scary right in the face and call it exactly what it is for others to hear so that we can make changes happen.
Amazing. I think a piece of advice I got that sits with me every day is that no matter who you work for or who you're working with, you are your own business at the end of the day, because we're all going to work with people who are not our same vibe and are not representative of who we are as people. Like if you are working for anyone, that's just going to be
the case. And I think you have to remember that if I am running a set, I have a boss, I have someone who owns the company I work for, but when I'm running a set, I'm doing it the way that I want to do it. And then if there's someone else who comes on set and is it my vibe, you got to stick to what you know is right and how you want to do things. And remember that there's going to be people on that set who will come back and work for you and with you, but maybe not someone else who you work. You know what I mean? So I'm trying to say this delicately, but just remember that you're going to change jobs and iterations of jobs, and you're going to work for so many people over the course of your career. But if you are really true to who you are and how you want things to be, people will remember that. And I think you'll always have success in moving forward because of that, because you're honest, because you're being who you are, and you're not needing to just mimic the actions of who it is that you're working for, which is also really hard because you're going to want to please a boss who might not do things the same way that you would approach things, you know? So that, I think that's hard. Yeah.
It's great advice. Okay. We've got time for one more. I did that side. So we'll go to you.
Interesting. Well, first of all, good on you. Like, that's amazing. And you know what? After I spoke up for myself in that job, I thought the same thing. I was like, well, gotta go to grad school. Like, this is so refuge. Like, this, no one's gonna hire me. Like, I yelled at him. And you know what actually happened is that through that experience, I learned what I don't want. And if I had to keep experiencing what I did while I was there to continue on in my career, then that's, I don't want that career, you know? And you should feel the same, right? Like if something is so uncomfortable that you're feeling you have to continue to speak up for yourself and your value or what you think is right, you don't want to be there. And you don't want those people advocating for you anyway, you know? And so, and what I learned too after that experience is, you know, I really wanted to be a producer, but after that, I really questioned myself and I was like, is this the right job for me? And I ended up going and working as a talent executive for 4 years. That's how I met Tamara. I did something completely. I said, let me try something new because this is not it. This is this part. And unfortunately, the men that I've been working for, it's rough out there. And so I said, let me try something new. I worked for a woman and I became a talent executive. And oddly enough, that is the path that got me to being a producer. Weirdly enough, it's just, that's the way that it went. And it wasn't on my, you know, my vision board, like go be a talent executive. Like I didn't even have experience in that going into it, but it ended up being the best thing that I could have done. And a lot of my friends at the time, I was between being a talent executive at a company called Awesomeness and working at Amazon. And I went with Awesomeness and they said, what are you doing? They said, what is Awesomeness, first of all? And why would you pass up a job at Amazon? And I said, I just think it's time for me to do something different. They thought I was nuts. They were like, okay, girl, she's lost it. But at the end of the day, I ended up, one, working, and I could tell that that environment I was going into was going to be a really good environment for me mentally. And I said, let me go work in a place that I'm going to have a really good work-life balance and feel good about myself in. And because I was working in a place where I felt good, I then was able to make my dream come true. And I think you should all remember that. Like if something doesn't feel right, it doesn't matter. It's not going to matter. It really won't. I don't know how you guys feel, but.
Yeah. I agree. I've also had a scenario where it was really scary and I was fresh out of college. I needed a job. I took it. I was working for a crazy and I made it 2 weeks. 2 weeks I made it before I put in my 2 weeks. And then I left and I was really scared. And I remember I was crying to my mom in the car over lunch. And she said, what are you crying for? Leave. You don't have to stay. Don't stay where you are not celebrated because there are plenty of other places that will celebrate all that you are. And I've learned that every single stage where I have taken that leap and I have left a place not knowing where I was going to land. And I've landed on my feet. And that's the way of it. Turnovers happen in this industry all the time. Trust me, baby, I never even had to put that on my resume. Nobody knew I was there. It's not even a company anymore. And my boss told me I'd never be a good rep. Ha. Look at her, right? Man, you land on your feet.
That is like the best note ever to end on. You land on your feet. And thank you all. Thank you to our panelist daddies. And let's party.
Daddy Dailies is presented by Not Your Daddy's Films, a social impact organization dedicated to educating and empowering women and non-binary creatives in TV and film. If you like what you heard today, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a positive review. If you want more Daddy episode insights and links to what we talked about, join us on Patreon/NYD Films. Daddy Dailies is produced in partnership with Robert Bailey and edited by Carly Tamarin, Fika Stubblebine, Claudia Restrepo, and Gracie Strauss. See you next time, Daddy.